We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Our next guest is one of the best jobs in the world. He gets to go to sporting events and call them. MLB on Fox, Chicago Bulls. And he is doing the game this weekend at Levi's Stadium. 49ers and Dolphins, Adam Amin. Good enough to join us here on the Bay Area Chevy Dealers guest line. Thank you so much for joining Damon Bruce, Ray Ratto this afternoon. We appreciate your time. Adam, how are you, sir?
Gentlemen, I'm doing very well. Thank you. Hope you're doing the same.
We are doing the same. Absolutely. I think the 49ers are doing a whole lot better today because Jimmy Garoppolo is back in the building, and it also happens to be George Kittle's 27th birthday. So what more could a tight end ask for in a present than a starting quarterback coming back to a lineup?
I think you might have to get a look at the T-shirts that Garoppolo had commissioned for Kittle's birthday today with a very interesting photo. I did not get a clean look at the shirt itself, but apparently it is an entertaining photo of one George Kittle, now of age 27, as you mentioned, and apparently the shirt is a big hit with the entire group. So that's
is
how
it beefcakey, yeah. Because they do kind of swap beefcake photos of each other.
Listen, they have a bromance. However, I'm sure Ray is cringing at the sound of that word, and that is fine and acceptable and probably the absolute right visceral reaction to it. But they do seemingly have a bromance together. They clearly have a lot of love for each other. They respect each other's game a lot. And you see how much of an impact guy Kittle is, right? I mean, he's doing it with Mullins last week, with Beathard on the final drive, his blocking ability, everything that people praise George Kittle for. He's earned that reputation for a reason. It's rightful praise. So to now have the guy who is meant to be in that role on a consistent basis, a quarterback, to have, you would think, a better grasp of the offense and the athleticism and arm talent to maybe execute even better, you hope that this is a 49ers team that starts to get back to some semblance of what we saw a year ago when they started 8-0.
Conversely, how much prep have you felt like you had to do about the possibility that you might see Tua Tagovailoa at some point on Sunday? Or are you pretty well convinced that this is still Ryan Fitzpatrick's show for the immediate future?
I think for the immediate future, it's Ryan Fitzpatrick's show. That being said, I'm well prepared on Tua. I got a chance to call his college debut, in fact, when he played Fresno State at Bryant-Denny 3 years ago, right around this time. So I've had the opportunity to call several of his games. I saw what happened last year in the Mississippi State game when he got hurt, but I have a good understanding of him. And I do think, and we might be talking second half of the season. I don't think it's that particularly far away, but I think, as you said, Ray, for the immediate future, yeah, I think it's Ryan Fitzpatrick's team. I think for the time being, that's where Brian Flores feels most comfortable. We'll find out a little bit more tomorrow when we have our typical meetings with the road team on Saturday. But it really feels like for the immediate future, Fitzpatrick is where they feel most comfortable in terms of having a veteran presence.
Adam Amin's going to be doing the Niners and Dolphins game this Sunday from Levi's Stadium. He's good enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. Getting you ready for it. And again, we know the 49ers very, very well around here. The Miami Dolphins don't nearly hit that national big game of the week very often. So what can you tell us about them as you prepared for this team? We know that Devontae Parker is a problem. What else?
I think they have a couple of issues that I'm sure Niners fans are going to be much more aware of by the time kickoff rolls around, being as I know you guys really do lock in on what's happening week to week with the opponent. I feel like you'll look at left tackle and think this might be a good opportunity for some of these linemen who are getting opportunities because of injury. Bosa's out, Solomon Thomas out, no more DeForest Buckner. You're getting a lot of guys that maybe weren't expected to have as many snaps as they're about to have. They might be going up against a guy at left tackle, whether it's Jesse Davis or Julione Davenport. They're not, you know, they're not Austin Jackson. Austin Jackson was the rookie out of USC who had gotten off to an excellent start in his first four games and then suffered the foot injury at against Seattle last week. So now the left tackle position becomes a major concern for Miami and maybe an opportunity for some less experienced guys, or maybe guys who weren't expected to be as much of a contributor as they're about to be, for them to get some action and get to the quarterback and get to Fitzpatrick. Pushing the pocket against somebody like Fitzpatrick is important, and then being able to contain because of what he does in the scramble game. So I think that's something that we could see a lot of. Devontae Parker is a problem. Is he fully healthy? We'll find out. You know, he's been dealing with a little bit of a hamstring at times this year. We'll see if he's good to go. The running back position, I think they have a lot of speed. You guys know Matt Breida very well, so you'll get a look at your old 49er and in a really running back by committee and a revolving door back there. Miles Gaskin's a young guy out of Washington that I'm sure Pac-12 fans are well aware of. So there are some pieces. Obviously, Gesicki's a good tight end, but I think there's a lot more concern right now than there is stuff to be excited about if you're the Dolphins. So I think 49er fans are probably feeling a little good right now.
Miami's secondary has been much criticized and ranks poorly in a lot of metrics, but they've had two terrible games and two pretty good games. So are they a decent secondary that just has some bad numbers, or are they a bad secondary that played better than they should have twice?
I would like to believe it's more of the former. I feel like getting Byron Jones back, it makes them a better secondary. And I think Xavien Howard should probably be somebody that more people talk about. You're right. This isn't a team that has a lot of national, whether it's appeal or attention. Either one, I think, is appropriate there. But I think Xavien Howard's a player that more people should know about. So I think they're a better secondary than maybe we realize, that maybe have had a couple of bad games. So I would be aware of such things. I think they have strengths on defense. Their linebacking core has typically been good. They've typically been well-coached. They have a lot of different things that they can do, much like Bill Belichick's defenses. When Brian Flores was a part of that staff, you do see a lot of exotic looks out of six-man fronts. You know, there's a lot of run-stuffing ability for this lineup, and there's pass-rush ability out of exotic looks. So I think there are some interesting things on this defense that have put their secondary in a lot of man-to-man situations. And considering that they've been in a lot of those spots, I think they've actually performed fairly well. But obviously, you know, the rest of the season is going to tell us a lot more. But for the time being, I think they're a better secondary than maybe we realize.
Adam Amin here on 95.7 The Game. In all the play-by-play that you've done this year, can you even come close to getting used to doing games either from remote locations in satellite studios or doing games without fans? Like, which is the harder hurdle as a broadcaster to overcome, being remote or being all alone?
Being remote. It's for me personally, this absolutely might be different with other people, but for me personally, I don't think it's even close. It is so much harder to not be there than it is to be there and not have any fans. When I put a headset on, I kind of just get lost in the game. We spend all this time, right, preparing during the week, over the course of months, just in the course of a long season. We do all this preparation for the sake of, you know, being immersed in the material come Sunday. You know, we work really hard to make those hours on Sunday, you know, feel like it was worth it to put all this work into it during the week. That's the fun time to be on the air. So you kind of get immersed in that. You don't necessarily realize the gravity or maybe the lack of gravity when the fans aren't in the building. Plus we have that kind of extra noise, you know, pumping in to our headsets. I know some of these broadcasts have added in some noise just to kind of normalize it a little bit. We get a little bit of that. So that helps that process. I was just in Houston for the first time at a baseball stadium this season. You know, I've been doing all my baseball games remotely, and finally we were calling the NLDS the other night, and it was amazing. It felt great to be in the building. I felt very fortunate in that sense. But the not being there or trying to call it off monitors and not feeling fully confident in what you're seeing and having to trust a picture rather than your own eyes, that's harder for sure. So I was very fortunate and very thankful that we had a chance to be there this week for some baseball, and thankful that we get to be on site for these football games.
Have you given in to the new broadcasting cliche of doing a game in an empty building and going, this crowd is going wild?
I haven't said it yet. And you've me a service, my friend, because you saying that only confirms for me that I absolutely took the right track in not saying something like, and the crowd goes wild. Now, during our baseball games early in the year, we added some, you know, on Fox, we added the virtual fans, right? I think last time I talked to you guys, it was after a Giants A's game where we had the virtual fans. And that's just funny to reference that. In my head, in my messed up, screwed up head, it's just funny to make jokes about virtual fans that don't exist. I just think there's irony and hilarity in that. The crowd thing, like, that's a little more eerie and a little bit more, I feel, a little closer to home for some reason. So, no, I have not taken the track of making the really bad pun yet.
Adam,
you may continue to work.
We're about to get our baseball Final Four. And again, since you've been calling playoff baseball games, I'd kind of like a little thumbnail sketch of what you think might happen. We're obviously about to find out whether the Yankees or Rays end up meeting the Astros. On the other side of the coin, Braves and Dodgers. What did you expect? What is the surprise? I mean, I can't believe that Atlanta has basically turned into the team that you can't score runs against.
That's the biggest surprise, certainly of what I saw. You know, not much of the Dodgers-Padres series surprised me. The Dodgers were able to get through a ninth inning with a lot of difficulty, but that's been kind of an MO for them over the course of this weird season, just trying to get out of the ninth inning. Offensive explosions, that's not surprising. But the Braves pitching, to not have Soroka, to not have Cole Hamels for more than a start. Felix Hernandez, you know, they had him in spring training, like way back in spring training. That never came to fruition. And they're leaning on Max Fried to now elevate. This is the guy who was in the bullpen to start the playoffs last year and now gets elevated into the ace role, pitched like it all year. Ian Anderson has no business being as calm as he was. Kyle Wright has no business being as collected as he was. I think Aaron Judge just hit a home run. I was shocked that Atlanta's pitching staff, their starting staff, performed as well as they did in the five games so far in the playoffs. The American League, I mean, Houston's, they got hot. And it's just, I'm sure there's a lot of irony that we could think about and discuss for, you know, at a later date. But just, Houston's going to be in the ALCS, and they are going to be a very hard out for either the Rays or the Yankees, whoever advances. So I guess we can't be shocked when a team gets hot, but the Braves pitching staff by far, that's been the biggest surprise in this postseason thus far.
Okay, so if it's Astros-Yankees, does America have a rooting interest in the stadium swallowing up both teams, or will they root for the Yankees because they've decided they have to hate the Astros? Or do they like the Astros because they've always hated the Yankees?
I think anything involving some kind of earth implosion is probably what many baseball fans would hope for if they have to watch that series. But I do feel like not being a Yankee or Red Sox fan, or not really hating the Yankees. I'm very indifferent to the Yankees. I was a National League kid growing up, so I didn't really pay attention to the Yankees and what their fans thought until recent years. So for me, I don't like what Houston did. I don't like, you know, but this is just me personally. I have nothing against Carlos Correa as a human. I'm sure there's, you know, there's plenty of good there. I'm just saying that what he said in the context of being a baseball player who is dealing with fake baseball drama, saying that, oh, you know, everybody's hating on us. Well, what do you have to say now? You still cheated, man. Like, that's not going to get past people. Like, people are going to be upset about that. So my guess is that the majority of baseball fans are probably going to take that as their narrative of preference and probably somehow root for Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton and Garrett Cole to win a series and go to the World Series.
And if they win it all, without a single trash can being employed, does their shame go away, or do they wear this one for life?
I think there is a tendency to have memories like that fade in the public consciousness. There will always be a point in baseball history and specific baseball history. We still discuss. We showed a graphic the other day about how good the pitching staff for the Braves had been thus far, comparing them, their ERAs through five postseason games. And one of the teams on the list was the 1919 Cincinnati Reds. I don't know anything about the 1919 Cincinnati Reds other than the graphic they showed me, which means their pitching staff was good and that they won the World Series that year because that was the year of the Chicago Black Sox scandal. So that was, you know, that was eight men out. That was the year that, you know, they threw the World Series. That's the only reason I knew that. But I'm immersed in a very specific corner of, you know, I need to know that for a really specific reason. Most people don't need to know those things. And I do think that if the Astros win the World Series in a weird, strange year where we should probably stop complaining about most things, I do feel like people have a tendency to forget. Maybe not forgive, but they have a tendency to forget.
Adam Amin, it's always good to have you on here. It really is. You are a man for all seasons. Again, the football, you're all over it. The baseball, you're all over it. I mean, I got an NBA guy on my phone line here now, too, so I got to ask you, in a world where we're supposed to now appreciate things more, if LeBron and the Lakers win this tonight, any chance LeBron is appreciated more in the aftermath, or will it be another example of how do we blow holes in a man who is nothing short of one of the most extraordinary athletes we'll ever watch with our own two eyes?
There will be no appreciation, no universal appreciation for him until he's done, until he is retired. We have a tendency in general to not appreciate accomplishment, and I guess that's it. We have a tendency not to appreciate a high level of accomplishment until we have nothing left to compare it to. Because we're still going to constantly compare LeBron and numbers. We're going to do that for the rest of time. But to appreciate the individuality of LeBron James, I don't think that will come until he's retired. When we realize there is no other LeBron James. It might take another 10 years before we get somebody. Well, I mean, we've been hyping up Zion Williamson, but he's not the same type of player. You have to be put in a position and be a specific type of player for you to become that, you know, that kind of icon. We're not going to appreciate him until he's done. I hope it's soon after he's done. I hope it's quick that we understand and appreciate his accomplishments and in a very wild context in his career, social media in 2000, you know, for him in 2003 to have that level of hype with no social media, to go into the age of social media and be as clean cut and be as honorable as he seems to be, and then take us through as the captain of the NBA, one of the strangest times in human history, and seemingly give us a sense of normalcy. I don't think we'll fully appreciate that until he's done.
Can we convince you to make a 1919 Cincinnati Reds reference in Sunday's game?
If we have a promo for the National League Championship Series, I feel like that might be a good time to drop it. I'm already picturing the promo. I don't even want to give it away. I'm already picturing the promo, Ray. Like, I can hear it in my head. You know, Monday or whatever the day of Monday on FS1, game one of the NLCS, Dodgers Braves. Who saw this coming from the Braves pitching staff? Putting up numbers like the 1905 New York Giants and the 1919 Cincinnati Reds.
Can we get a graphic of Arnold Rothstein?
That might be it might be a little bit harder for me to find the connectivity there, admittedly.
All right, let's work a little bit more.
You're a network guy. You can do this.
Let's work in the milieu of the last.
Did I fail the profession today? I feel like I am. Rado's guilting me.
How about this? This is how you can absolutely get a passing grade. Should the Miami Dolphins miss a field goal this Sunday, can we get either a Laces Out or a Ray Finkel reference?
That is a challenge, and I will certainly accept and more than likely fail.
It was great to talk to you. Thank you so much. I mean, this was great. You keep getting assigned to games that we're talking about, and it's great because you're nice enough to pick up the phone whenever we call Thank you so very much. Have a great weekend.
Appreciate you, boys. Thank you.
Good friend of the show, and that Mr. That friend of the show is none other than Mark Spears, who is good enough to join us on 95.7 The Game. He is a senior writer at ESPN's The Undefeated, and it's always good to check in with him, especially when we're on the brink of maybe something very historic happening in the NBA, and that is, of course, the Lakers winning yet another title, LeBron possibly winning another title, and when you look at just the man's longevity, it's extraordinary what LeBron has done, and the fact that he is, what, 9 out of 10 finals, 10 out of 13? It's amazing how much we have taken him for granted. We never take Mark Spears for granted, though. Damon and just Ratto, no Kolsky today. It's just the three of us here. Mark, how are you, pal?
Good, man. I'm in the media dining room inside the bubble, and perhaps our last meal. Because if the Lakers do win, I'll be on a early flight, and in an odd way, I'd be looking forward to eating the food at the airport.
Oh, I bet. I hope you get to just get out of there like a chopper, pop smoke, and leave, man. Really, you have been there a long time. How many days? Are you over, what, 70, 80 days now?
I think I'm at 90 today.
Wow. That's 3 months in the bubble. You really got to love basketball to do that, man. Your coverage, let me just say, before I hand it over to Ray, because he's not going to give you a single compliment, you know that. Your coverage has been exemplary. We had Mark Medina on. I think his work has really stood out. Tim Bontemps is one who's done great work, and you, sir, have done an incredible job all bubble long, all season long, every season.
Oh, thanks, brother. Appreciate that, man. It's actually, I guess, some inside baseball, basketball. And Ray would appreciate that. It's been a weird environment because, you know, we can't go into the locker rooms before games. We can't go after games. They're trying to fight us in terms of having one-on-ones, no walk-offs. You can't talk to guys in terms of an interview if you see them on the campus or in the hotel area. So it certainly has been a unique challenge, especially from somebody who lives in being in a locker room and talking to guys there.
They said how much he's hated the bubble. You know, he's done it. He's been the good soldier like they all have. I mean, this is really more of a tribute to the players and their sense of discipline than anything else. But he said he hated the bubble. Do you get the sense as a result that the NBA, if they were forced to either start in January with a bubble or push the season back to February or even worse, that they would rather push the season back than subject the players to another round of this?
Yeah, I expect it to probably start in February, maybe even March. And what Adam Silver wants to do is he's not counting on a vaccine. He's counting on rapid testing. You know, where you could test somebody to go in and, you know, Ray, as you know, man, like losing a lot of money on not having people in the venue. So that's about 40% of the basketball related income. So if they could figure out a way to get people back into the stands, I think they'd rather wait and have the ability to bring people back in chase than rush and then not have anybody there. So from talking to some people yesterday, I mean, there's even some talk about March. So I'm going to – this is the last basketball game. I'm going to enjoy it because I'm not expecting to see one for a while.
So before we get into the most predictable sequence of LeBron questions, let me ask you the least predictable thing. What are the chances that Jimmy Butler's got one more swing with a pair of brass knuckles for this series?
I would not be surprised if I'm here longer than tonight. Jimmy Butler loves this kind of stuff. He's a guy whose life has been against the wall, so this doesn't scare him. The Heat have had this built for the bubble mentality that they've thrived on. So, you know, they're even talking about three up, three down. I think they're realistic in knowing that that's a Herculean task, but they're crazy enough to believe that they could do it. And if the one thing that I have not liked about the Lakers this series is, with exception of perhaps last game, is that they've had an ability to win the first three games, I think, pretty comfortably, and they've let their foot off the gas. They bit them in, you know, game three. So I don't think they do that tonight. You know, Chris Haynes keeps saying over and over, they got the Mamba jerseys on. They got the Mamba jerseys on tonight. They haven't lost. And I'm like, well, Kobe's not playing. God rest his soul. You know, I think the Mamba jerseys adds pressure that they already have, you know. Let's see how Anthony Davis plays in that pressure. Let's see how LeBron plays in that pressure. But if LeBron James could play the way he did in closing out Denver, if he does that tonight, then it's a wrap. But if they're going to come in and dilly-dally like they've done a lot, I mean, you're talking about a team that has had the most generous road to the finals of any potential champ, perhaps. I mean, they have not played anybody higher than a third seed, and it's not their fault. They play who they play. But they did not play the Clippers. They did not play Toronto. They did not play the Bucks. They did not play Boston. You know, the team they're playing is a fifth seed team in the East. So they need to be the better. They are the better team, but they need to play like it. And let's see what they do. But I am not expecting Miami to just hand them the trophy.
So what, ignoring individual legacy discussions, what will be the most lasting legacy of this playoffs? Will it be when the Bucks walked out and said, we're not playing for social reasons? Or is there something else out there that we're not seeing above and beyond the Lakers regaining the glory they once had?
I think it's in what you said initially. I'll never forget that week, the entire week, from the start of the week, and George Hill being really upset about, you know, what happened to Jacob Blake. And basically after a win on a Monday, Danny was tired of cops. And that he didn't understand why they were at this place. They should have never came. And then that next day, you know, Doc Rivers had his emotional plea. And quietly that night, the Raptors and the Celtics had a meeting where they were talking about not playing. So that next day, on that Wednesday of that week, which I believe was the 26th of August, they had George Hill went to lunch with the coaching staff and told him, the Bucks coaching staff, he wasn't going to play. Ends up going to the game in support of his team, but to tell them, like, he's not playing. Sterling Brown follows him, and then the team follows him. And it not only did the rest of the NBA follow them, but the WNBA, National Hockey League, Major League Baseball, Naomi Osaka. Like, I think it was then that they finally realized what kind of power they have as athletes and what kind of impression they were truly making in this world. So to be there when that was going on, man, I'll never forget that. I'll never forget the emotions of those days and, you know, how in the end they were able to get more focused towards both voting and getting all the arenas to be validating places. So,
Mark Spears.
I mean, the hoop is significant, but that's like real life.
Absolutely. Hey, didn't mean to step on you there, but I'm doing it to help sell books because I know you got to run because you got an NBA Finals game to cover. But you've just written a book about Spencer Hayward. It's called The Spencer Hayward Rulebook, available now on Amazon and where everyone picks up their books. So, I'm a student of basketball. I love the history of the game. I honestly don't know a thing about Spencer Hayward. Why did you write this book about Spencer Hayward? What part of his story did you think needed to be told? Educate me. I have no Spencer Hayward working knowledge.
Well, Spencer Hayward's a Hall of Famer who also probably is a godfather of NBA free agency. The NBA did not want to allow him to play after a year of playing in junior college. He had to go to the Supreme Court to get that ruling. So essentially, he affected free agency for everybody that followed.
It's like the Curt Flood of basketball?
What's that?
Like the Curt Flood of basketball?
Basically, yeah. But he also is like the Forrest Gump of basketball, too, because he just has – I mean, both you guys would love it because it's just a lot of amazing stories. Like, he grew up in the cotton fields of Mississippi. He dealt with some, and I'd say the story, some really extreme racism the day JFK died. He was on the team. He basically got kicked off the finals team that during Magic's rookie year for drug issues. He was married to Amon. He played in
Ooh, look at that. Okay. Yeah. Spencer Hayward got down.
Yeah, so I got to get you guys the book. There's a lot to his story. I think myself, Gary Washburn, writing about Spencer Hayward, it's an easy read, a fun read. It's just a lot of great stories, and his life is pretty interesting, to say the least.
I'm interested in it. I wish you luck with it. And when we finally get out, when you get out of the bubble and we get a little time between now and the NBA draft, let's circle on back and have another conversation. But in the meantime, thank you as always for your time. And I do hope you get out of Orlando lickety-split, man. I really do. Thank you very much.
Yeah, if I get to SFO tomorrow, I might actually literally kiss the floor. We'll see.
Kissing the hardwood. Thank you very much to Mark Spears of ESPN's The Undefeated. Great stuff with him.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.